Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, March 23rd, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. China and Russia veto a draft UN resolution for a Gaza ceasefire.
Russia launches its biggest attack on Ukraine in months.
Delhi's chief minister is arrested over corruption claims.
A report shows Argentina's middle class has shrunk under Javier Milei.
Marjorie Taylor Greene files a motion to vacate House Speaker Johnson.
Donald Trump's Truth Social platform is set to go public in a major merger.
Police officers from the Mississippi Goon Squad are sentenced to prison.
Candace Owens is out at the Daily Wire.
Kate Middleton is undergoing cancer treatment.
And a U.S. medical team transplants a modified pig kidney into a human for the first time.
In our top story, China and Russia veto a draft of the United Nations Security Council resolution on the Gaza ceasefire. Here are the facts agreed upon by UN News, BBC News, the permanent mission of the People's Republic of China to the UN, U.S. mission, and Associated Press. The United Nations Security Council, or UNSC, has rejected a draft resolution proposed by the U.S. concerning an immediate and sustained ceasefire in Gaza on Friday morning. While 11 of its members supported the resolution, two permanent council members, China and Russia, used their veto power against it. Algeria also opposed the draft, and Guyana abstained. The failed resolution stated that the UNSC, quote, determined the imperative of the ceasefire while calling for the measure to be in connection to the release of all 253 remaining hostages. Commenting on the country's veto, Chinese UN Ambassador Zhang Jun claimed that the Security Council had to promote an immediate, unconditional, and sustained ceasefire, accusing the U.S. of creating preconditions within the resolution. In contrast, U.S. UN Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield described Russia and China's actions as deeply cynical and petty. Washington argues that alternative wording to a ceasefire resolution may, quote, not support the diplomacy happening on the ground and could threaten ongoing negotiations. Previously, the U.S. vetoed three resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza following October 7, 2023. Following the vote, Palestine's ambassador to the UN stated that a further resolution drafted by 10 UNSC members is expected to be voted on by Saturday morning.
This is the show where we separate the spin from the facts. Eric laid out the facts, and our first spin is a pro-establishment narrative from the Washington Post. While the U.S. resolution was unsuccessful, the draft highlighted a key shift in American foreign policy direction. Although the language used within the text was certainly unorthodox, its passing would have irrespectively placed further pressure on Israel. The U.S. has joined the international community in placing pressure on finding the end to the current conflict in Gaza.
Now our news has the establishment critical narrative. Half a year on from the Gaza catastrophe encouraged by Washington, the U.S. resolution has been met with international criticism and makes a mockery of the definition of, quote, immediate. It's likely, despite the outward change in rhetoric, that America's resolution was nothing more than a superficial attempt to gain leverage in negotiations aimed at maximizing its hegemony through its proxy state, Israel.
And from time to time, we have statistics-based nerd narratives brought to us by our friends at the Metaculous Prediction Community. This time, they predict a 50% chance that Israel will lift the blockade on electricity, food, gasoline, and medicine in Gaza by June 2024. Russia launches its biggest attack on Ukraine in months. The facts on this story are agreed upon by the Financial Times, CNN, the Associated Press, and Ukranska Pravda. Russia on Friday launched its biggest attack on Ukraine in months, unleashing a total of 88 missiles and 63 drones in morning strikes. Ukraine's Air Force said that from those 151 targets, 55 drones were shot down and 37 missiles were destroyed. All 31 missiles that were headed for Kyiv were destroyed, the Air Force added. It was the first time the Ukrainian capital was targeted in 6 weeks and came as the U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan traveled to the city for talks with Ukrainian leadership. However, with so many drones and missiles breaking through missile defenses in other parts of Ukraine, Blasts were recorded in 9 other regions of the country. At the time of reporting, at least 5 civilians are dead and 14 more are injured. 3 people are considered missing. Russia's strikes largely targeted Ukraine's critical infrastructure, knocking out power stations and energy suppliers in the cities of Kharkiv, Kryvyi Rih, and Zaporizhia. In the wider Zaporizhia region, Russian missiles struck the Dnipro hydroelectric power plant. Energy facilities were also struck in the regions of Lviv and Vinnytsia. Friday's attacks come after Ukraine, on the back foot on the front lines and with dwindling ammunition, has increasingly taken to launching missiles of its own into Russia over the past several weeks. Earlier in the week, the governor of the border region of Belgorod ordered the evacuation of 9,000 children and for schools to be closed on Friday. According to Ukrainian sources who spoke to the Financial Times, U.S. officials have, in recent days, repeatedly urged Ukrainian counterparts to halt their targeting of Russian energy infrastructure, warning that actions provoke a retaliation, but also that they could negatively impact global oil prices before the U.S. elections.
Scott, thanks for the facts. The First Spin is a pro-establishment narrative coming from the Financial Times. While the U.S. under the Biden administration continues to be Ukraine's closest supporter, what Ukraine must understand is that oil prices have a major impact on U.S. elections, and striking Russia's supplies could dramatically change global costs, even despite the sanctions. Having Biden lose the 2024 election over the cost of gas won't help Ukraine achieve its war aims.
We have a pro-Russia narrative from TASS. Attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure are a direct consequence of the failure of the country's leadership to meaningfully engage in peace talks and thinking they can defeat Russia on the battlefield. The energy infrastructure targets are tied directly to Ukraine's armed forces and command and control. These attacks will stop once a more sober position is reached.
And the nerds from Metaculus say there's a 49% chance that Joe Biden will be re-elected president of the United States in 2024. Delhi's chief minister is arrested over corruption claims. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Scroll In, The Week, India Today, Al Jazeera, and BBC News. The Indian government's money laundering watchdog, the Enforcement Directorate, arrested Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal, a key opposition figure, on Thursday over irregularities in the state's liquor policy. Kejriwal, leader of the Aam Aadmi Party, or AAP, was taken into custody from his New Delhi residence after reportedly skipping multiple summons of the probe agency. On Friday, Kejriwal withdrew his petition from the Supreme Court, challenging his arrest as he seeks to contest the directorate's 10-day remand first. The Enforcement Directorate is probing if the Delhi government's 2022 excise policy, which ended its control over the sale of liquor in the capital, had given an undue advantage to private retailers. Kejriwal and AAP have denied any wrongdoing, claiming his arrest, which comes weeks ahead of India's general election, is politically motivated. AAP, known as the, quote, Common Man's Party in Hindi, is part of a 27-party opposition bloc called Indian National Developmental Inclusive Alliance, reportedly formed to challenge Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP.
Thanks so much, Eric. We have left and right narrative spins on this story. Let's start on the left from The Guardian. This is the first time in independent India's history that a sitting chief minister has faced such coercive action. This is part of the BJP's systemic effort to pull the rug from under the Indian opposition weeks before the national polls.
Indian Express has the right narrative. The BJP is walking the talk when it comes to rooting out corruption from India, especially from the higher echelons of power. Kejriwal's arrest shows that, no matter how big the leader, India's agencies will move against the accused in their mission.
And another nerd narrative from Metaculus, they claim a 98% chance that the right-wing incumbent BJP will win the 2024 national election in India. A report claims Argentina's middle class is shrinking. Here are the facts on this story as agreed upon by DW, the Buenos Aires Times, Merco Press, The Economist, and France 24. The Pontifical Catholic University of Argentina's Social Debt Observatory has claimed that the middle class has declined in the country as the poverty rate increased to nearly 60% from 49%, allegedly during the period since President Javier Milei took office. The latest data from the National Institute of Statistics and Census put the poverty level at 40.1% in the first 6 months of 2023. In the third quarter of last year, the Social Observatory survey recorded the rate at 44.7%. Additionally, a report from a consultancy firm, which compared the basic remunerations in dollars from South America, has found that the minimum wage in Argentina, $196 at the current exchange rate, is the lowest in two decades and worst among all countries in the region. This comes as the self-proclaimed anarcho-capitalist Milei completed 100 days in office this week. Last month, monthly inflation fell to 13%, and the government achieved monthly surpluses for the first time in over a decade. On Monday, thousands of Argentines attended anti-austerity demonstrations called by trade unions and other social movements. Police deployed water cannons, batons, and tear gas to disperse the crowd blocking key roads into Buenos Aires.
Thanks, Scott. The spins begin with a pro-establishment narrative coming from Foreign Policy. As the far-right Milei has devalued the peso and cut subsidies for essential services, the average Argentine citizen is paying the price for his fiscal adjustment program. Poverty has reached an all-time high in the country. The purchasing power of wage workers has fallen by roughly 14%, and there's a recession on the horizon.
The establishment critical narrative comes from the New York Sun. Inflation has fallen on Argentina month after month since the libertarian economist turned president took office and implemented his shock therapy to revive his country's economy, which has long suffered from hyperinflation and rising poverty. Milei's government has posted the first monthly budget surpluses in years and is making remarkable inroads toward fixing the Argentinian economy.
And the nerds from Metaculus say there's a 15% chance that Argentina will fully dollarize its economy before 2028. Marjorie Taylor Greene files to vacate House Speaker Johnson. The facts are agreed upon by The Hill, New York Daily News, NBC, Fox News, and CNN. U.S. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, filed a motion to remove House Representative Mike Johnson, Republican of Louisiana, from his position as House Speaker. She said this was a warning, but that she wouldn't immediately bring the motion to a floor vote. Her decision was in response to the House passing a $1.2 trillion bill to fund large chunks of the government for the next year, which Greene called a, quote, betrayal of the American people, and blamed Johnson for getting outplayed by Democrats. Her motion was not filed as privileged, which would have triggered an automatic vote in 2 days. Instead, she filed a regular motion, which will go to a committee for consideration, which could last a while. After the procedural committee vote, which is reportedly likely to fail, the vote would then go to the House, for which Johnson would only be able to lose the support of two Republicans if all Democrats voted against him. Other House Republicans and Greene would use the upcoming 2-week recess to decide when to bring the motion. Many in the party are said to be trying to convince her to rethink, arguing that a vote could lead to Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York, ending up taking over. While there are Republicans who voted against the spending bill and criticized Johnson for pushing it through, they haven't said whether they'd vote to remove him. Some Democrats, however, have said they would vote to keep him rather than vote him out.
Thanks for those facts, Eric. We have a Republican narrative from PJ Media. While many on the right have correctly criticized the $1.2 trillion funding bill, removing voting to vacate Mike Johnson is not the solution. With a razor-thin majority in the House, the GOP needed to pass something to ensure the government was funded and the party didn't fall apart. After seeing the chaos that followed Representative Matt Gaetz's motion to remove Kevin McCarthy, the party cannot afford more turmoil ahead of an already uphill battle in the 2024 election.
Town Hall comes back with a conservative narrative. Mike Johnson has already abandoned his constituents to work alongside the Democrats. So what's the point in worrying about how this motion could impact future House leadership? The $1.2 trillion bill, which Americans on both sides were against, proves Johnson doesn't care about representing the will of the people. Removing a problematic politician from power isn't what's hurting the country. His being in power is.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus. there's a 45% chance that Republicans will win control of the House in 2024. Trump's Truth Social to go public in a merger. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by BBC News, ABC News, CNBC, Forbes, and the Associated Press. Former President Donald Trump's social media company, Truth Social, is set to go public after shareholders of Digital World Acquisition Corp., or DWAC, a special-purpose acquisition company, approved a merger with Trump Media and Technology Group, which owns Truth. The deal could be a major financial boon for Trump, who is set to own a majority of the newly merged company with 79 million shares. At DWAC's closing price of $42.81 on Thursday, Trump could gain over $3 billion from the acquisition. Trump's potential windfall from owning 58.1% of the company comes as he has just 3 days to pay a $464 million bond related to a civil fraud case in New York. State Attorney General Letitia James has threatened to seize Trump's properties if he doesn't pay by Monday, despite his appeal. The agreement contains a 6-month lockup period that prohibits Trump from quickly selling shares, and there is no guarantee that DWAC's stock price will maintain its current value. However, the company's board could vote to waive the lockup period to allow Trump to access his quick cash. The new company will be renamed Trump Media and Technology Group, and it could be listed on the NASDAQ exchange under ticker DJT next week. Even if Trump can't sell off shares, he could use his ownership in the company, valued at more than $5 billion, to leverage loans for any payments. Trump Media and DWAC first announced plans to merge in 2021, 1 year before Truth Social was launched, following Trump's ban from major social platforms. The deal could potentially be stalled by a federal probe and potential lawsuits.
Scott, thanks for those facts. The first spin is a pro-Trump narrative. It comes from the National Review. President Trump is the ultimate businessman and one of the most resourceful people in the world. And his merger deal for Truth Social is a massive counterpunch against Letitia James' illegitimate efforts to seize his assets. Trump is set to make billions of dollars, and he will have all the resources he needs to fight back against malicious Democrats and radical left who are desperate to take him down. Trump's millions of devoted supporters are behind him and will only fuel his business's growth.
And the anti-Trump narrative from CNN. Headlines may make it seem like Trump is set to become $3 billion richer overnight, but the facts are less kind to the embattled politician who will struggle to pay his $464 million bond. Even if pro-Trump sympathizers on the Trump media board allow him to sell his shares, he won't be able to post $464 million that he owes New York, and Letitia James won't let him off the hook. Regardless, Truth Social has been an utter failure that's been bleeding money, and just like Trump's other failed businesses, his media experiment will fall flat on its face.
Once again, the nerds have a narrative saying there's a 50% chance that Donald Trump's net worth will be greater than $2.42 billion this year. The Mississippi Goon Squad police officers are sentenced to prison. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CBS, Washington Post, NPR Online News, the United States Department of Justice, and Fox 13 Memphis. After pleading guilty to their crimes in August, six white Mississippi police officers on Thursday were sentenced to between 10 and 40 years in prison for committing extrajudicial targeting and torturing of two black men. After receiving a call about two black men staying in a house with a white woman in January of 2023, the officers broke into the home of Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Parker without a warrant. Then they used racial slurs, brandished stun guns, and performed degrading acts on the victims. The officers, who called themselves the Goon Squad, were publicly known in Rankin County, Mississippi, to use violent tactics. They were also found to have sexually assaulted the victims and shot one of them in the mouth during a mock execution. After the incident, the officers, who pleaded guilty to the crimes, destroyed the evidence and attempted to cover it up by planting drugs on the victims, filing false reports against the two men, and pressuring witnesses to maintain the cover-up. The one officer who was not from Rankin's Sheriff's Department, Joshua Hartfield, was sentenced to 10 years. Although he didn't stop the crimes, he had no history of using excessive force and was found to have been forced to participate in the cover-up. During the sentencing, one of the high-ranking former deputies, Brett McAlpin, who was sentenced to 27 years, said his actions were, quote, not how people should treat each other, adding that he's, quote, really sorry for making law enforcement look so bad.
Thanks, Eric, for those facts. We have some narrative spins on this story. The Clarion brings us narrative A. While this is the latest example of law enforcement's longstanding culture of discrimination in Mississippi and throughout the U.S., these officers should have been fired long ago, but their boss allowed it to go on. While these individual officers were rightly convicted and sentenced, those at the top should be held accountable for the role they played by turning a blind eye to racism and violence.
The New York Times has narrative B. Everyone agrees these officers' crimes were horrific, which is why they're going to jail for a long time. But their acts weren't necessarily racist alone. Currently, the country is dealing with a subsection of law enforcement that's overaggressive and victimizes people of all races, giving law enforcement as a profession a bad name. This is a broadly systemic issue that must be addressed.
And the nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 1% chance that a large American city will fully abolish its police department by January 1st, 2035. Candace Owens is out at the Daily Wire. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Jeremy Boring's ex-account, Candace Owens' ex-account, The Hill, Deadline, Forbes, and the Daily Mail. Daily Wire co-founder Jeremy Boring on Friday posted to X, formerly Twitter, that his media outlet has cut ties with conservative commentator Candace Owens. Boring did not provide any details. Owens also posted to X saying, "The rumors are true. I am finally free." Her post then said people who'd like to support her work should go to her website. Owens' rhetoric on the U.S.'s role in the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas and the Gaza Strip, and her comments about Jewish people in general had reportedly sparked controversy within the Daily Wire. Daily Wire host Ben Shapiro called her commentary on Gaza disgraceful. Owens, who spent 4 years working for the Daily Wire, was recently denounced by the Anti-Defamation League when she recently liked a highly controversial anti-Semitic tweet. Since becoming a conservative in 2017, Owens has been vocal about opposing the Black Lives Matter movement, feminism, and the Walt Disney Company. Her Daily Wire podcast, Candace, launched in 2021 and counted former President Donald Trump and former VP Mike Pence among its guests. Previous calls from Owens' critics to fire her had been ignored by the outlet, which often cited her free speech rights and her not being in violation of the law or her contract's terms.
Scott, thanks for the facts. The spins begin with narrative A coming from The Root. It was only a matter of time before Owens parted ways with Daily Wire. Eventually, every media outlet has a limit to how much backlash to controversial statements it can take. She probably should have been ousted after her numerous racist and xenophobic comments, and her recent anti-Semitic rhetoric was the final straw.
And narrative B comes from the post-millennial. The Daily Wire claims to be a bastion for free speech, but clearly it's not above regulating speech when it conflicts with the opinions of its other employees. Owens has always been against U.S. involvement in foreign wars, and her denunciation of U.S. involvement in the conflict in Gaza fits that pattern. Her separation from the outlet was done in bad faith.
Kate Middleton is undergoing cancer treatment. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Independent, Fox News, BBC News, and Huffington Post. Princess of Wales Kate Middleton has revealed that while undergoing a recent abdominal surgery, doctors discovered that she has cancer. Following her diagnosis in January, the princess said her doctors advised her to undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, which she is now in the early stages of. Before her surgery was made known, Middleton had not been seen in public since last Christmas. Then she posted a self-edited photo of herself with her children earlier this month, prompting speculation surrounding her health. A Buckingham Palace spokesperson said King Charles was, quote, so proud of Catherine for her courage in speaking as she did, and that he has remained in the closest contact with her throughout the past weeks. This follows the king's own treatment for an unspecified cancer. Kate and her husband, Prince William, the heir to the throne, are also very popular within the UK. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak noted that Kate has the, quote, love and support of the whole country.
All right, Eric, thanks for that update on this interesting situation. We have a narrative A from Politico. The public should leave the princess and her family alone, especially politicians. Everyone, including the royal family, has a right to privacy, particularly when it comes to serious health issues that demand compassion. Abdominal surgeries and cancer treatment are not trivial things to be gossiped about, so Buckingham Palace should continue doing whatever it feels best for the family.
Time has narrative B. While personal health issues should be reported on respectfully, the royal family needs to take responsibility for how it curates its lives to the public. Posting edited images and keeping the public in the dark only makes rumors spread faster. William and Kate have long been successful in portraying themselves authentically and need to maintain this going forward.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 14% chance that King Charles III will abdicate the throne before September 9th, 2032.
Do they not have HIPAA laws in the UK? Is it different there? Like you can just freely talk about your health stuff?
No. It's Pippa Middleton is her sister. Our final story, the first ever gene-edited pig's kidney is transplanted into a human. Here are the facts as agreed upon by New York Times, Science News, Harvard Medical School, CNN, Reuters, and NPR Online News. Surgeons in Boston's Massachusetts General Hospital announced Thursday that a 62-year-old man with end-stage renal disease had become the first living human being to receive a kidney from a genetically modified pig. The four-hour procedure was performed on Richard Slayman of Weymouth, Massachusetts on March 16th. According to the hospital, he will be discharged soon and his recovery is going well. Slayman, who has diabetes and high blood pressure, received a human kidney transplant in 2018 but had to go back to dialysis last year when the organ showed warning signs. eGenesis, a Massachusetts-based biotech company, had developed the porcine kidney. The company injected several human genes into the organ to improve human compatibility and removed three genes that could cause rejection. In 2022, two brain-dead patients, a Vietnam veteran from Pennsylvania and a resident of New York, received genetically modified pig heart transplants, which could function for over 72 hours. Of the estimated 36 million people affected by chronic kidney ailment in the U.S., at least 800,000 have end-stage renal disease, a terminal condition that reportedly requires either a kidney transplant or extended dialysis sessions.
Thanks, Scott. The first spin is narrative A coming from eGenesis. This outstanding development opens a new frontier in medicine and demonstrates the potential of genome engineering to change the lives of millions of patients facing acute organ shortages worldwide. In addition, if human-compatible kidneys from gene-edited animals can be successfully transplanted on a large scale, dialysis will become obsolete. While there's a long way to go, the dream of xenotransplantation finally seems within reach, which is a promising sign.
And narrative B comes from the Hastings Center. While xenotransplantation could make the organs more compatible and less likely to be rejected by the human immune system, it could lead to greater animal exploitation and the spillover of animal viruses to humans. Pigs are sentient creatures who feel fear and pain and shouldn't be treated as a source of spare parts. Researchers need to focus on cleaning up the organ donation system, including making organ donation opt out and leave the animals alone.
The nerds from Metaculus say there's a 19% chance that lab-grown organs will be successfully used for human transplant by 2025. I like the fact that they've made a fancier word for pork. So
yeah,
when I want to have some roasted pork, it's roasted porcine.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. It's like the Panamanian stinkfish or something, but they renamed it Chilean sea bass.
Right.
And sales went up. Whatever the original name, it's not very appealing. But hey, Chilean sea bass, ooh la la, that sounds good.
Didn't they do that with squid too? Isn't that like renamed calamari, or is calamari an actual animal?
I think calamari is just a preparation of squid. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, because okay. No one really wants. Yeah, I don't want some squid with. Although I love calamari. You can call it squid. You can call
it
whatever.
Call it what you want, but it's tasty, right?
I'll take it. Yeah, I don't like octopus. You'd think you'd be. It's not the same thing. It's so.
I had
chewy.
That in Cancun. It was gross.
Not good. Yeah.
No, I did not like that in Cancun. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, March 23rd, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news. You can download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.